Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from New York City. Today, we're going to look at the other side, the hidden side of science, public health science. For example, we're going to show you the trauma that can occur in your life when you understand epigenetics. Let's say something was wrong in your parents', even your grandparents' lives. That can be passed on to you. Monsanto's genetically modified soy is scarier than you think, from Mother Jones. The breast cancer industry is deceiving women. This is from the Alliance for Natural Health. And a popular antidepressant may promote breast cancer. So we have a lot to share on health. On the environment, we're going to talk about Ohio geologists link earthquakes to hydrofracking. So that's important. Drought covers, quote, 100% of California for the first time since they began monitoring it, the entire state. Also, from our environmental segment, there's a new study showing that there were multiple safety failures pervasive at site of a mysterious nuclear leak. The U.S. government's own report faults declining safety culture of release of radiation at troubled New Mexico doom. So we'll talk about that. And then, time permitting, I'm going to begin to read some letters from the victims of Gardasil in their own words. Also, the government is meddling in the crucial UN climate change report. Now, if you remember, on the last two programs, I talked about how there has been a politicalization and commodification and corporatization of science. So those who control science today, or the official organs of science, the magazines, the doctors on air, are giving us their side of it. But it's not always the truth. To the contrary. And today, the newest report shows that, quote, a top U.S. academic has dramatically revealed how the government officials forced him to change a hugely influential scientific report on climate change to suit their own interest. Harvard professor Robert Stavins electrified the worldwide debate on climate change Friday by sensationally publishing a letter online in which he spelled out the astonishing interference. We'll share that with you and why that's important. More information on why you should be concerned about vaccines. We'll talk about the human papilloma vaccine and the ovary. A new report in a major peer-reviewed journal presented before thousands of scientists at the proceedings of the World Congress on Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Infertility in Austria talks about what Gardasil could do to the ovaries. It's not good. Also, a new study in a major peer-reviewed journal talks about autoimmune inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants. And what are those adjuvants? Aluminum in your vaccine. 3,000 doctors and scientists gathered to discuss this. It was the International Congress on Autoimmunity. So we'll show you why we've been talking about what's wrong with vaccines, and people thought, all right, mercury's the culprit. Well, mercury is bad, but aluminum is more vaccines and is equally bad. Let's begin. This is from a Frida Burrell. Thank you, Frida, for sending this to me. Quote, this is the story of Tina and the drastic effect Gardasil has had on her day-to-day living and the pain and suffering she's going through. She has tried to help herself as best she can, as the medical profession seem at a loss to suggest anything that will improve her situation. Quote, I'm a 28-year-old. Before Gardasil, I worked as a full-time painter and decorator, a career I had enjoyed since 2004. In my spare time, I was involved in CrossFit training, walking, roller tours, and actively socializing with friends and family. I've traveled a lot, Generally, I was very physically active, whether at work or leisure activities. It took me a long time to realize the truth. Gardasil has a dark side. I got my third vaccine on the 6th of June 2013. At that time, I had no idea that there could be a possible connection between my aching arms and Gardasil. Sadly, I know better now. My elbows are the biggest problem as they prevent me from working. Therefore, I've spent all my time trying to find a solution for the pain I'm experiencing in my elbows. When will somebody out there start to realize we are not making all this up? We are decent human beings who believe we were doing the right thing when we were vaccinated with Gardasil. Now it feels like we were abandoned because the medical profession either does not care or simply has no idea how to treat any of us. Possibly the latter, but it's about time they investigated these cases and came up with some answers. This is my plea on behalf of all human papilloma vaccine injured girls and boys. Please stop giving us excuses. Start looking for answers. End quote. I would agree with that. But at these times, here's what's happening. There is a major documentary coming out that is 100% pro-vaccine. What is not revealed is that the tens of millions of dollars that the advocate for the vaccines has made off owning patents on vaccines, the millions of dollars going to his department to support vaccine research, the money he makes on tours and on symposium. If you're going to do something, you should show the person's financial interest. Also, why not have people on who can hold their own in legitimate debates on the safety and efficacy of vaccines? I found 41 people who made it into the final cut of the film, The Silent Epidemic. These are all board-certified, top of their field, immunologists, vaccinologists, and gynecologists. Every one of them says the same thing. They all began believing in the safety and efficacy of individual and multiple vaccines. Today, they know that the science does not support that trust or faith. The trouble is, and here's where it gets confusing, an awful lot of the autism groups and the vaccine groups are sponsored by front groups that are sponsored by Big Pharma. It works this way. You end up with an injured child. You know the vaccine was responsible. The government doesn't help you. You end up having to pay for this out of your own pocket. And then one day, you join a group with others who have similar responses. And then you find out that your group is funded. And one day it's funded by millions of dollars. And what you're looking for now are safe vaccines. You're not anti-vaccine. You're for safe vaccines. So you start with the idea that all vaccines are safe and effective unless they've injured someone. And since most people, 99% of people, would never report on an adverse reaction because doctors don't report, and even the head of the FDA, who I personally interviewed, said that as little as 2% of vaccines adverse events are ever reported. So then you're thinking, all right, well, all the American people who've had vaccines as adults and children, they're all good and they work, but we want to stop those bad batches. So now you're funded. You can make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, plus have a whole career. And as long as you say vaccines are safe and effective, but we want more research money to create even safer vaccines, you'll say that you believe that a vaccine caused your child's autism, but only your child's autism. And what you want are safer vaccines that prevent autism from occurring in the first place. Once again, these are funded by pharmaceutical companies frequently making the vaccines that cause your kid's injury. But now there are firewalls. The vaccine companies, through a subsidiary of their pharmaceutical parent, into a subsidiary of a nonprofit foundation, then goes to a front group. So you have all these levels of firewalling, so you can't easily track the money back to its source. And one of the reasons that there is so much divisiveness within the vaccine community is because the people running them, I believe, don't want to know the truth. I would not have stated that had I not had personal conversations and said, take a look at the evidence. Here are the actual studies showing you that there has never been a safe vaccine. Now, look at them and then prove these people wrong. They won't do it. And then you see they make millions of dollars. The same thing has been going on, the same racket's been going on in the world of AIDS treatment and research for decades. Hundreds of millions of dollars been made by groups and individuals within those groups, as long as they say this is the only way to treat AIDS. It's not. We have the evidence. But they control the media, they control the policymakers, they win. So that's why you have to look behind the scenes. And as long as the people want a safe human papilloma vaccine, then they won't be looking at the fact that Gardasil is not safe, not effective, has never been proven effective. And the entire premise of what it does is based upon speculation and artificial mathematical models. And that's why we are not, as a nation, being more critical of our vaccine policy. Next up, new research, as published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature, shows that, quote, sperm RNA carries marks of trauma. Stress alters the expression of smRNAs and leads to depressive behavior in later generations. This was published in Nature Neuroscience. Quote, that proves that stress in early life alters the production of the DNA. Now, this falls in with hundreds of other studies that show the following. I think this is very important. I believe that most people would like to have and cherish a quality relationship. Then comes the confusion. What is it the opposite of a quality relationship? One of conflict? One of blame? One of self-sabotage? One of denial? And because we're afraid to look in a mirror and see the truth of what is looking back at us, our own complicity in what we've created. We create stories. And the stories become our get out of conscious thought free mode of living. We're always blaming someone else. I've seen it so many times. One religion blaming another, one political party blaming another, one sect, one group, one fraternity and sorority, one tribe, always blaming another. One race blaming another race. But it starts with the individual. And yet we know that at the basis of so much of what we feel and how our body responds today is an altered DNA from early in life when we had no control. So let's say that you're two sisters and you're a year apart. And one sister's kind of easygoing, happy-go-lucky, and the other one is very meticulous and very controlling, needs to get straight A's, needs to be the best at everything. But for one reason, the father chooses to give more of the time and attention to the happy-go-lucky sister, kind of laid-back, easygoing sister, the very vulnerable sister. And the other sister begins to take this as a rejection and then grows up with this epigenetic idea that they'll prove, and they do. They prove that every relationship, there's a competitive male represented by the father image. And they're going to show that this male has no control over him. And so any imperfection in the man is immediately pointed out, to the point where finally men just say, thanks, goodbye. Even at work, nobody can really work with this person because they're so quick to point out anyone else's faults and flaws, but never their own. Never take responsibility. And then one day, this person is just alone and lonely, has everything that success should be, has all the tools of happiness and no happiness, no contentment. While the sister, very happy, very content, and doesn't run through one relationship after another, self-sabotaging it. Only through therapy did the one sister find out that she was absorbing an epigenetic energy and then manifesting it. But let's say you didn't have two sisters. Let's say you were only son or your only daughter. But your mother or father didn't like you for some reason and were verbally abusive. Now you take that in. Then one day, it's in your genes, it's in your DNA, you're hardwired. You're hardwired like a hidden or buried emotional minefield, waiting for someone to say the wrong thing, as you perceive it, do the wrong thing, the wrong gesture, and suddenly you're going to explode. The trouble is you might finally, in time, say you're sorry, recognizing what you did was overreach, overextension, wrong. But then it doesn't change anything because you got 300 million other minefields ready to blow. And this is one of the problems we face in our society. Chronic dysfunction. It is my belief that we could not be obese, we could not be alcoholic, we could not be drug addict, we could not be working ourselves to death, we could not have so many dysfunctional relationships unless we were, at our core, fundamentally flawed in ways that we are not willing to accept nor desire to change. Because we've mastered being a victim, and all we can do is blame others. So no reason, no logic, no truth, no documents, nothing will change this person. I wished it were otherwise. And these are the people that ultimately get people into their lives to rescue them. So always be wary of the person that promises the world emotionally, and you become the person who thinks that, wow, so many good qualities, I'll rescue this person. The reality is, you rescue no one in life. No one. The person we should be paying attention to is the person who has come to an awareness. They should be living at a higher level of ideals, are doing so as best they can, and are willing to share the best of themselves without blaming you or making you the scapegoat. If all person has is, well, you don't know what it's like, you weren't abused, we have all been abused. All of us. I don't not know a single person on earth that has not been abused or challenged in different ways throughout their entire life. Not a one time off. It's a part of just living, doing business with. If you worked at one of Pacifica's stations, then you could write a book on abuse. But you also understand that you don't have to take it personally, and you don't have to take your personality and alter it or your beliefs or perceptions because of the negativity and dysfunction of an entire community and a governed system and individuals who couldn't function in the real world, so they've got a great place to hang out. You don't take it personally. You just say, that's for them to deal with, not for me to absorb. So we got to get to a point in our society when we realize that everything that's ever happened to us can become a part of us and alter us, or everything that's ever happened to us becomes a moment of clarity as to what we will not engage in or will not do. We are stronger, wiser, better, spirit, more spiritual than what has been done to us. And then we have a worthwhile life to live. Otherwise, it's just one dysfunction after another. This study simply shows for the 1,000th time why we must express an appreciation for the work of Dr. Lawrence Lachan, Hans Selye, and all the others, Bruce Levine. Each one contributed something to epigeneticism. Next up, Monsanto's genetically modified soil is scarier than you think. This is from Tom Philpott from Mother Jones. I'll just do the first page. Quote, Monsanto GM soy is scarier than you think. A new study on genetically modified soybeans finds that the herbicide Roundup is making its way into our food. Soybeans are the second largest U.S. crop after corn, covering about a quarter of American farmland. We grow more soybeans than any other country except Brazil, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. More than 90% of the soybeans churned out on U.S. farms each year are genetically engineered to withstand herbicides. Nearly all of them involving one called Roundup. Organic production, by contrast, is marginal. It accounts for less than 1% of total American acreage devoted to soy, and Americans don't eat much of these green, lime green legumes directly, but that doesn't mean we're not exposed to them. After harvest, the great bulk of soybeans are crushed and divided into two parts. The meal, which mainly goes into feed for animals, that become our meat and fat, most of which ends up being used as cooking oil or in food products. According to the U.S. Soy Board, soy accounts for 61% of America's vegetable oil consumption. And given soy's centrality to our food and agriculture system, the findings of a new study published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Food Chemistry are worth pondering. The authors found that Monsanto's ubiquitous Roundup Ready soybean, engineered to withstand its own blockbuster herbicide, contained more herbicide residues than their non-GMO counterparts. The team also found that genetically modified beans are nutritionally inferior. In the study, researchers looked at a sample of three kinds of soybeans grown in Iowa, those grown with genetically modified herbicide-tolerant seeds, those grown with from non-GMO seeds but in a conventional agrochemical-based farming regime, and then organic soybeans. They found residues of glyphosate, the active ingredient Roundup, in the two types, but did not find them in the organic. And it goes on to talk about how serious this is. So that is important. Also important, you've seen the athletes wearing the pink ribbons and the pink football shoes and all that. We have to separate out the effort to find a way of preventing and controlling and helping people with cancer, noble, which I believe most reasonable and responsible persons agree with. After all, you actually see a photograph of me on my website where I was on Wall Street on one of those podiums speaking to, I'm imagining, thousands of people. You can see it in the photograph, promoting the American Cancer Society, asking them to support more cancer research. And I went everywhere I could to help promote breast cancer awareness and treatment, because I did not want to believe that cancer would be politicized and commodified and commercialized, until I received a call one night from a man who I'd known, a respected journalist named Pat McGrady Jr. He was the U.S. Bureau Chief for Newsweek in Moscow. And he said, "Gary, do you have a few moments that I could introduce you to my father, who I had never met?" And I said, "Sure." I was working at that time over at the Institute of Applied Biology. And he came by, and Mr. McGrady Sr. had been the head of the American Cancer Society's Public Relations Division for 25 years. And in fact, I don't think there's anyone before him. And he said, "What I'm about to tell you is very serious, but as a journalist, please don't take my word for anything. I will provide you with documentation." And then he told me this horror story about who controlled the war on cancer and the President's National Cancer Advisory Board and who these people were and where all the money went. And none of it was really going, in his opinion, to prevent cancer. And it was only going into drugs that they controlled the patents on. And I listened to him, and indeed I found it hard to believe, but I began my search, and 2 years later, that led me to writing the first of a series of articles on the politics of cancer, which nobody would publish. In fact, I went to Mother Jones. I went to Atlantic Monthly, Harper's. I went to the East Village Other. I went to Ramparts. You name it. Every Ms. Magazine, every so-called progressive or liberal magazine, conservative magazine, nobody would touch it. And one of them was very honest with me, at least. She was the niece of one of the people who had been a victim of the politics of cancer. And she said, "Gary, if we touch this, our advertising will dry up. These people not only not do any advertising directly, they can reach out to advertising bureaus and no one wants to take an ad." And finally, there was a newspaper. Ed Downs was his name. Towns. And he came to me and he said, "I heard you got a manuscript that's been rejected." I said, "Yes." He took a look at it and he said, "I'll publish it." And he published it in what was called the East Side Other, and which was an East Side newspaper. And it won an award. And Robert Houston, my co-author, and I, you can see that picture up there also on the website. And then I got a call and the guy said, "We'll get this published." And everywhere we tried to get it published, the advertisers, the heads of advertising, said no. So that taught me a lesson about the integrity of those publications who say they're for the people, unless it meant their bottom line would be affected. In any case, it was finally published, and then it went viral. Not when they're internet. We didn't have the internet then. billboards everywhere you looked, politics, cancer. And then Gabe Pressman did a series. I respected Gabe. He did a 10-part series. 60 Minutes did a piece on it. 2020, Geraldo Rivera did a piece that won an Emmy. And this was all from this series. One on Brzezinski, one on Burton. All told, it's 28 articles. It's just as bad today. There is nothing I trust about the war on cancer. Nothing. I want to read you. This is from the Alliance for Natural Health USA. Quote, the breast cancer industry is deceiving women. Quote, are regular mammograms doing more harm than good? Let's take a look at the science. For the past 20 years, controversy has swirled around the question of the benefits of mammography. Unfortunately, breast cancer is a huge and thriving industry, and its powerhouses have lined up squarely in support of mammography. Susan G. Komen, for The Cure, which took in $343,373,526 last year with major industry support and gave its CEO a 64% raise, for total pay package of $684,000, claims, quote, the life-saving benefits of mammography are clear, end quote. You may recall an article I broadcast on the air about Komen and their penchant for pinkwashing. The American College of Radiology, of course, the organization that offers accreditation in breast cancer mammography and rakes in tens of millions of dollars a year in fees from legally mandated mammography accreditation, says, quote, mammography saves lives. And the American Cancer Society and the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists both recommend yearly mammograms, starting as young as 40. But what does the actual science show? Recently, just 2 months ago, a 25-year-long Canadian trial found, quote, no difference in death rates from breast cancer among women who had had regular mammograms and those who did not. The American College of Radiology immediately trashed the study, calling it, quote, incredibly flawed and misleading, end quote. All right, the American College of Radiology's self-interested reaction dismayed many, particularly Dr. Gilbert Welch, professor of medicine at the highly respected Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice. He published a scathing opinion piece vis-a-vis CNN, blasting the American College of Radiology and fuming that, quote, it's time to get the science back in screening mammography and to recognize that mammography may not be the ideal source for balanced information, end quote. Good for you, Dr. Welch. But mammograms aren't merely useless. They could very well be harmful. First, they may increase your risk of cancer by subjecting you to unnecessary radiation by abusing breast tissue. Second, they're inaccurate to the point of being downright dangerous. According to the National Institutes of Health, quote, 90% of abnormal mammograms are false positives. Even a staunch proponent like Komen acknowledges that the likelihood of getting a false positive over the course of 10 screenings is 50 to 60%. Additionally, mammography misses 70% of cancers. That means for every 10 breast cancers, 2 are completely undiagnosed. A false positive causes more than anxiety. It causes pain, financial distress, and exposure to risky, unnecessary medical procedures. Women who receive an abnormal mammogram must go through additional mammography screenings, ultrasounds, magnetic resonance imaging, and even painful tissue sampling via fine needle aspiration, core biopsy, and excisional biopsy. If there is cancer, biopsy can spread it. Perhaps the saddest mammogram side effect is overdiagnosis and overtreatment. The treatment of breast cancers that most likely would never have resulted in illness or death. Many breast cancers resolve themselves, and treatment itself can endanger your health. Chemo attacks your body and immune system. Radiation pointed at the breast can damage the heart, potentially leading to death years later from heart failure. And by then, of course, nobody will associate the heart disease with the radiation that it caused it. So why promote mammograms if they're ineffective and expensive? Well, let's take a guess. If every woman who is recommended to get a breast exam did so, that's $8 billion a year that someone is making, mainly the radiology industry. Conventional medicine is not a unified block on this issue. More and more physicians and even organizations that are typically opposed to integrated medicine, such as United States Preventive Services Task Force, are recommending less frequent mammograms. But if not mammography, then what? Some kind of screening is necessary. After all, breast cancer is on the rise. 1.7 million women were newly diagnosed last year. It's up by 20% from 2008. 1 in 8 American women, about 12%, will develop invasive breast cancer over the course of their lifetime. Many integrative doctors recommend thermography. Breast screening, thermography, is a safer, more effective alternative to mammograms. Thermography uses no uncomfortable mechanical pressure or ionizing radiation. Instead, it takes a picture of the heat produced by the body, which the practitioner study for unusual changes or heat clusters. It can detect cancer up to 10 years before a mammogram would, and can even detect cancer before tumors are formed. The mammogram myth may be beginning to crumble, but don't wait for the dust to settle. Talk to your integrative physician about safer ways to prevent breast cancer. And one final thought, which is my own, since I work with so many women who've had breast cancer. Watch almost any television show. What are you seeing? The vast majority, almost all the cooking shows, you no longer see a congenial beard or Julia Childs showing us how to cook, in my opinion, unhealthy food, but with nice mannerisms. Instead, you see people in spitting matches of vitriol, of hate, animosity, working on artificial deadlines, competing, winner-take-all, losers of failure, kick them out the door. The worst of human nature is experienced and expressed in these shows. Then you watch the food themselves. And I give an example of two of the worst shows from health perspective, from my opinion, are the exotic show, where this guy will eat anything anywhere without any concept of what it could be doing to him or the people that he's advocating for, as well as the man versus food, which is very popular, and understandably so. The man has a very good personality. He's funny, he's upbeat, he's kind of like an everyday food Rocky guy. But then you look at him, and you look at the amount of food he's eating. I don't know how he makes it 24 hours after eating a meal without having a heart attack or stroke. I believe that there is no way in the world this guy is going to have a happy outcome. But it's not him. He's being paid to do this. He's being paid to walk the tightrope across the Grand Canyon blindfolded on one foot. It's all the people who are in those restaurants because they get the super meal and are able to gorge on massive amounts of food. And then, what do you think that protein does to a woman's estrogen level, and what does that do to her breast? And then we deal with stress, nonstop stress. Everyone is stressed. And we even pride ourselves on how stressed we can be. That stress leads to estrogen, and then weight gain. That leads to estrogen, and all that contributes to breast cancer. We should be dealing with the three primary causes of breast cancer: the diet, the weight of the person, and the stress levels. Then we would be saving 1 million women a year in the United States. But we won't, because there's no money in it. And that's unfortunate. I'm Gary Nall. We're talking about the issues that make a difference. One final report on environmental issues. This comes from Countercurrent, and it's, quote, "Governments meddling in crucial UN climate report." We knew sooner or later, someone who's highly respected would raise their hand and stand up and say, this is all wrong, how we're treated, threatened, intimidated, coerced to come up with the reports the government and industry wants instead of what the science says. We now have that person. Here it is. Quote, "A top climate expert has claimed officials from all main countries, insisted on changes in late-night meetings, and the intervention amounts to a serious conflict of interest. Quote from David Rose, The Mail, a top U.S. academic has dramatically revealed how government officials forced him to change a hugely influential scientific report on climate change to suit their own interest. Harvard professor Robert Stavins electrified the worldwide debate on climate change Friday by sensationally publishing a letter online in which he spelled out the astonishing inference. He said the officials representing, quote, all the main countries and regions of the world insisted on the changes in late-night meeting at the Berlin conference 2 weeks ago. Three-quarters of the original version of the document ended up being deleted. And it goes on to talk about this. Okay. We're not surprised. We've heard from whistleblowers in all walks of life, in all areas of science, and we've seen this happening. So now you know that some of the most significant ethical scientists in the world are being threatened, intimidated. Publish what we want. Get rid of all the bad news on climate change. After all, we need to let people believe that climate change is not real. If it's real, it's not man-made. If it's man-made, we've got 150, 200 years before we have to do anything. And that's why we do the reports here. We do more environmental reporting than any other radio program in the United States. And we do it every day. And we tell you the truth ahead of the curve. Now you know the truth. Two more truths coming at you. So the entire system needs to be investigated. And I believe that we should have official investigations to bring in those who are responsible and hold them accountable, and if not, bring in the world court to do so. I believe everyone that pressured the scientists to change the official findings, delete bad information, should be held accountable on crimes against humanity. We told you that gas hydrofracking leads to earthquakes. It was proven in England. It was proven in Oklahoma. It was proven in Arkansas. It was proven in Texas. Here's the latest. Quote, Ohio geologists link earthquakes to fracking. State introduces seismic monitoring. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources announced that it will start requiring oil and gas companies to install networks of sensitive seismic monitors on their wells to detect small earthquakes that could be caused by hydraulic fracturing. The special requirement will kick in if companies request permits to drill horizontal wells within 3 miles of a known fault line, or where earthquakes greater than 2.0 magnitude have already been recorded. If monitors detect any tremors in excess of 1.0 magnitude, drilling must cease while experts investigate the cause of the seismic activity. Good for them. So I commend the Ohio's Poland Township in the county there, and the chief, Rick Simmers, the chief of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, quote, that there's a probable connection to hydraulic fracturing activity in the area. Good for you. You've started it. Now it's my hope that we'll get other states to do the same and other communities, other counties do the same. 2 years ago, I discussed this at length with Luann Panessi at a lecture that we had, and it was packed, and Luann was fielding questions from the audience. I never like to know what a question is before. I like to go, as I did last Thursday, into a group and see what's on people's mind and address it. Luann is on the phone right now, and she will raise that question once again, and I'll give you the answer I gave then and show you what has happened as of today. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I'm assuming that you're talking about the drought conditions, the water shortage condition.
Yes.
Well, very distressing, but you've been speaking to this for many years, not just this year, not just last year, but up to 5 years ago you mentioned this. And now for the first time, the Los Angeles Times is announcing that a prolonged period of below average rainfall has put the entire state of California under some level of drought, ranging in severity from moderate to exceptional, for the first time in 15 years. Now, that's pretty significant. Three-quarters of the state, though, Gary, is experiencing extreme drought. And then the other 25% is considered exceptional drought. Now, that's pretty severe. So it's a very, very serious situation. Most of the Californians that I know sit in denial, and they laugh, and they say, yeah, yeah, I know, and we're going to have a big earthquake, too. Yeah, we know all about it. So they kind of take for granted that the water is going to be there. They kind of get used to being told, well, don't water your lawns this week, or every other number can water their lawns, you know, two or three times a week. But this is horrific. The Sierra Nevada snowpack liquid water equivalent melted in 1 week because the temperature is as much as 12 degrees above average. And even that melt did very little to boost the reservoirs. This is a very, very serious situation.
Luann, it was 6 years ago that I was working on the 12 tipping points. Now I've gone up to 30 tipping points.
Oh, my God.
In fact, later this summer, I'll be going to Antarctica, Greenland, the Sahara Desert. I'll be going into the Brazilian rainforest. And over a five-day period in the Brazilian rainforest, I'm going to fly in a low-flying, it looks like a little blimp, but I'll be able to film at about 100 feet above the canopy, showing you the enormous consequences of global warming and deforestation on the entire Amazon. I'm going from one end of the Amazon to the other, going from the Nile, one end of the Nile to the other. I'm going to show you what's happening in Russia, in Canada. Even last week, by the way, did you know that an ice shelf broke off on Thursday that was 10 times the size of Manhattan, the largest such ice shelf ever to break, to go into the Antarctic waters? 10 times larger than Manhattan, largest ever. And what I said then, and I'm saying now, that we're going to go to bed one night in the next 5 years, and we'll wake up the next day with a foot of water, because you are now seeing a feedback loop on Greenland and Antarctica, where as more water melts, the hotter it gets, more pools form in the summertime, the more water goes to the bottom, the faster these ice sheets begin to break off, and there'll be nothing able to stop it. It's like taking the brakes off a car in San Francisco and trying to put your foot out the door to slow it down as you go down the steep hills. Not going to happen. You're going to see this happening. When it comes to water, it's not going to happen overnight. But as of today, as of this morning, according to Jason Wells from the Los Angeles Times, this is this morning, quote, drought covers 100% of California. A prolonged period of below average rainfall has put the entire state of California under some level of drought. And then it goes on to talk about how severe that drought is. Here's the politics of shortages of water. If you're in one of the seven states that are running out of water, you're just not going to have water, period. Then you will use your politic, you'll use your major metropolitan areas in order to take what water can be brought there away from other sources and lesser communities. We see that now between a treaty between Phoenix and Arizona and Colorado, where they put hundreds of millions of dollars into a water line, but that's when the water was still plentiful. Now it's not. So unless Phoenix makes major changes, it's going to run out of water. But that also means that 30 million other people who get water out of Little Colorado, they're not going to be able to get the type, and 100% of Nevada's water comes in there. Los Angeles, San Diego, and all these other communities. So we have the following states are going to run out of water. Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Texas, at least 80% of Texas, West Texas, Southern Texas. You're also looking at Kansas, and did I mention Colorado? In any case, in California. But that's just in the southern Southwest. I haven't gotten to South Carolina, Georgia. Most of Florida is going to run out of water. Florida will be as equally bad as most of the rest of the state. And they're relying upon some of these springs. But guess who's coming in to buy up the springs? Major water bottlers. It's already happened. I even got words this morning about how they're changing laws so you can't get your own water now. You can only get water that these big guys have bought and then will sell you. And they've said that the water could go to $4 a gallon. So in any case, what will happen is that the larger cities will be the least affected in the short term. But you're talking about thousands, literally thousands, of small communities and towns of under 3,000 people, about 1,000 towns and communities at 3,000 to 5,000 population that are on severe water restrictions or no water at all now, as we speak. That will only get worse for them. So you're going to see a migration away from these communities. Hundreds of thousands of dead animals are thrown onto the market because they can't afford to feed them, no grassland, and the erosion of once fertile soil. That'll leave way for dust storms and sandstorms. Sandstorms in much of the Southwest and dust storms in the Midwest. So it's only going to get worse. And yet people will still be able to go into restaurants and take as long a shower as they want and wash their car 24/7 if they wanted in some places. And the politics will encourage or allow that for about a year to two. But I predict in 24 months from now, you will have the first of a major breakdown in issues in Los Angeles and San Diego, a drop in property value, because there'll be severe water rationing in those communities. I also believe that Las Vegas, in my opinion, the ugliest place in America, it's just at every level I consider it vile. I wouldn't even lecture there. That's what I think of it. I'm asked to lecture all the time. It's one place I know I'd rather fly over it someplace because, man, do these people learn nothing. And yet, where do you think they're going to get their water? So you're going to see migration. You're going to see drop in property value. You're going to see then a reduction in social service, and you're going to see a loss in tax revenue. And the places where you're going to see people going to, the Great Lakes, North Carolina, upstate New York, Maine, Vermont, Wisconsin, New Hampshire, Rhode Island. So there will be places that are underutilized that will be then saturated. So guess where I wouldn't go? Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, the very place where everyone else is going to go. Because it's just going to take one problem and move it to another and deplete those in time. So we should have a national dialogue on water, on the fact that we're running out, we have too many uses and too little of it where we need it, and we have too much of it and no capacity to use it in others, and where we're going drought. These droughts are not temporary. They're permanent. The droughts you see now are not going to be resolved next year. The fires that you see are going to get worse. So that's what I'm predicting. Is it a pretty story? No. But I'd rather know the truth of my diagnosis so I can apply my principles of prevention and resourcefulness than to live in some mindless, euphoric, or dystopian notion that everything's cool, you know, someone's in command somewhere who knows what the fix is. I'm just not one of those people. Wrong. No one knows what the fix is anywhere. We've got a bunch of clueless people, bureaucrats and technocrats, and they're soft-shoeing this off the stage, and you're not going to see these people take responsibility. If we wanted really responsible people, you would have a water emergency in every state that has it, and you would immediately start rationing everywhere, and you would start making sure that you didn't allow water to be used except by a meter per day per family. You run out of water, that's it. You don't get any more. You don't want people who can afford the water to have all they want, and the people who can't afford it to have none. That's a lack of equality, and it's just insane. There's two things that will cause people to riot. Take away their food. That's why we had riots in Tunisia, in Egypt, and in Syria. That was the real cause. And take away their water. Then it doesn't matter what a person's politic is. Then you're dealing with survival issues. In the next 24 months, the people who at least are conscious will start making appropriate, reasonable, and timely plans to shift their energy and interest for their own well-being to a quality life in a sustainable environment. Thanks for your call, Luann. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment, and then we're going to open it up for your feedback. 888-874-4888, all over the United States and Canada. You can call that number, 888-874-4888. And I also, we have a way, I just don't know what it is. I'm going to ask him, if you want to contact us anywhere in the world off your computer, you can do that also. This moment I get that, I'll let you know what it is. All right, back in a moment. Jackie Wilson. I'm going to produce a documentary on Jackie Wilson. Anyone who knew him, you can reach out to me. I'm going to be doing it starting in about 3 months. My current filming schedule ends in 3 months. By the way, I spent all day. We spent 12 hours in Camden, New Jersey, and then in a tent city. Don't have time today. I'll talk about that experience because it was unusual. You got to know about this. You'll see some of it in the documentary, but we filmed so much. And, you know, you can reach out if you knew Jackie Wilson, have some interesting stories to tell. I want to get, I thought he was one of the most creative geniuses in all of entertainment. You can reach out at 877-627-5065. Something else, for the activists in the audience, and those who want to get active, come and join me in the street. 34th Street and 11th Avenue, noon, May 4th, crossing the Jacob Javits Center. I'll be broadcasting live, and I'll be helping with Mind Freedom, and I'll be a keynote speaker in stopping psychiatric assault. We're going to protest the American Psychiatric Association, and of course I have some things that I'm going to be handing out to the psychiatrists they go in, including some film footage of what 12 of them did when it came to taking a completely normal person and diagnosing with mental illness when there was no mental illness. That should be interesting. So if you've never been to a protest, you've never demonstrated on behalf of human rights, this is your chance. If you have one more thing to do that needs done to help all those who've been victims of our mental illness system in this country. May 4th, 34th and 11th, noon, across from Jacob Center. Also, I realize that so many people need help. I mean, I can't tell you how many people yesterday alone in the office, all day, packed. We were filming because I'm filming a whole bunch of new premium CDs for upcoming fundraiser. And one of the people came from the station and said, wow, this place is hopping. I said, yeah, people come every day. I help as many as I can, but I help the ones who are terminal. But now what we are doing, we're doing something different. I'm going to be hiring another qualified nutritionist. Ideally, you should have a master's degree in clinical nutrition, be a registered dietitian, and have your state boards. Money's good, but it's what you do that's more important. You're helping people for free. So I'm going to hire another person because we just have too many people need help. But we're going to do it differently. Two people are assigned just to counsel people from around the United States and Canada over the telephone. Because probably 99% of the calls we get are for people who can't make it into the city. If you live in the boroughs in New Jersey, you can make it in. But if you can't, you still need help. So if you want help, and it's free, you'll call and make an appointment with our nutritionist and call 844-318-3183. 844-318-3183. And I will be hiring another person, and you can call at 646-926-5422. You can give us your resume if you want to be hired. Let's say hello to Alan from Brooklyn. Hi, Alan. I'm going to ask you all to go through your questions real quick because we're running out of time.
Okay, Gary, real quick. The other day you mentioned Congress had a hearing about surge protectors for the coming electrical storm, solar storms from the sun.
Yes.
Maybe if somebody reached out to Mayor Bloomberg, he just donated $50 million to some kind of gun organization.
Alan, it gets better than that. We just now had a big solar storm that knocked out a lot of radio transmissions around the world just on Friday. I was going to report on that tomorrow. So we'll give them something that's real current to show you that this is not the future. This is now. but I appreciate you bringing that to our attention, and you are right. We're going to seek out. Diane from Brooklyn. Diane, your turn.
Yeah, two things real fast. Bruges is grown on sugar beets, correct? Now, sugar beets are mostly GMO now, so I'm just wondering if the yeast will also be GMO.
Yes, it will be, and that's why you have to look for non-GMO organic yeast.
Oh, they don't have it.
Well, no, it is. You can get it.
Where?
Go to your local health food store.
It's in there.
No. Then you got to go to a store that has more because it does exist, and you can get it online as well. Tony from Long Island. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Excellent.
You always are. Thank you for all your help with everything. Gary, last July, you spoke about setting up an aquaponic system, spend about $8,000 and generate about $35,000 in income from it. I've been trying to find it on your website. I'm not able to find that info. Actually, I'm not sure what website. I've tried GaryNull.com and Progressive Radio Network, and I wonder if you could direct me.
Yes. I did not do it yet. I started it, but I couldn't get any volunteers who actually wanted to go and live on a beautiful, idealistic farm and to work the project, even though I was going to pay them and get free room and board. Not a single person applied, so I didn't do it. But I am going to do it myself because I normally end up doing stuff myself. And so this middle June, I'm going to my homestead. I'm going to be there for a month, and during that month, I'm going to film taking the shell that I have built and finishing it for hydroponics and aquaponics, and how to blend the two together, and how to do it step by step, and it'll get done. All right? And I'm not seeking anyone else to, because that's just worthless. So anyhow, it'll be this summer, and it'll all be up on my website, and it'll be up on blog.garynull.com when it happens. We're out of time for most of our stations around the United States. I want to thank you for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Got a really powerful show this evening at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour. That's the most listened-to show I do. You won't miss that. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Progressive Radio Network. So we're saying goodbye to all those stations, but stay on the line if you've called, because we still have a few minutes to say hello and get the questions we have from Rose from New Jersey. Rose, you're up.
An old organic from the Garden State. Would we have any progressive minds out there willing to explain drip irrigation to all the big farmers? I hear the machinery going off in the background, and it makes me very nervous. Drip irrigation really saves water.
It does.
And what about all the golf courses? Are they still in business? They should be closed down.
All golf courses, except if there is abundant water. Because remember, we do not have a right to tell someone where they can live and under what conditions they can live. That is their right. I may be opposed to it, but I must also respect freedom of choice. Otherwise, we have a form of anarchy, and we don't want that, because then all we're going to do is what's been done before. We're going to isolate people that otherwise might be, you know, they might live at a golf course, but they might be buying organic food. They may not know all the pesticides. Don't always assume that everyone knows all the facts based upon the circumstances you find them in. They may not know how much water is used, because the spraying of water is almost done all night. It generally starts in late evening and then goes throughout the entire night. They don't know the kind of grass that's used. They don't know the kind of pesticides that are used in order to keep these weeds out, the herbicides. They don't know that can go into their groundwater if they're using groundwater. So first we have to understand that ecologically golf courses are a disaster, but we now have thousands upon thousands of them. And we need an educational program. So what I would do if I were you, Rose, is I would get first the information on why a golf course is not ecological, not sustainable. Then talk about how much water they use. They use over 9,000% more water than an average lawn does. And then how dangerous are these sprays that are used that they're right in full contact with. When you're spraying at night and they spray at night, you got your windows open, you got your air conditioner open, those fumes are going right through into you. That's what you should do. And then get these to the people who live in the developments. All right, don't ask me to do it. You've got a good idea. I'm doing 1,000 projects. You do this project. You can do that, can't you, Rose?
Can do.
Good. Then let me know. You get me the information, and I'll post it up on my site so other people can take it to the golf courses in their neighborhoods. And sooner or later, probably within the next 5 years, virtually all the golf courses in Arizona, Nevada, Texas, Oklahoma, California, Nevada, they're gone. They're going to close down. And if you don't have the golf course and all you have just sand, all those communities are going to leave, and those are the more affluent people. That'll drop the property down. So once it starts, it's going to be a full-scale rush to the exits. Thanks for your idea. Good idea, Rose. One last call. Let's say hello to Ed from Huntington. Hi, Ed.
Happy to get to talk to you. My concern has been about water from square one. The 2011 supplementary generic environmental impact study said that each one of these wells would consume 2.7 to 7.8 million gallons of water to bring in each one of these wells. Most of this water will be backflowed out and will end up in, right as it stands now, publicly owned wastewater treatment plants. That's what the study is about.
I agree, and that's why we're fighting it everywhere we can. And it's only after people have their air, their water, their pond, their kids coming in adversely affected. When your kid comes in and has blisters in their mouth, suddenly you realize, gee whiz, maybe you should have been listening to those people you thought were loons and nut jobs who were showing up at public meetings saying that this was bad water. So do the right thing. Spread the information. More people are becoming aware of it, and it starts to build upon itself. We create our own constructive loop when we do this.
Spread the numbers.
Yeah, spread the numbers, absolutely, because those are facts. Just like I said today that they're now in Ohio. I gave credit to the man in Ohio who started with one person saying, is there an association between an earthquake and hydrofracking? And they found within a certain above one, there's an association, and within a certain distance, there's an association. So now they're saying, you put a monitor there. That monitor goes off. It's above one. We close down your well. That's how we work. This is people power, and that's where we have to go. Thanks a lot. We're out of time. Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about President Obama's foreign policy objectives in Ukraine and the Asia-Pacific region. And we recall this day in 1967 when heavyweight champion Muhammad Ali refused to fight in the Vietnam War.
Great. In a moment, Utrice lead. Cutting edge, as always.